Hi, my name's Ben, and I am an addict.
Hi, Ben.
I'm very grateful to be here at this convention. It's always good for me to come here. I remember going to my first convention. It was in Crystal City, and I had about 45 days clean. And I couldn't believe addicts did all this, you know. I mean, I remember just walking around like I was in Disneyland or something, seeing, wow, you mean they got T-shirts, and they got banners, and they got speakers, and they got all that kind of stuff, and was pretty amazed, because up to that point, I had very little contact with Narcotics Anonymous, every year that I come here, you know, it's a lot of people I only see once a year, and I see them right here. And that's a good feeling. One thing I want to share about my recovery is I do get around. I like going to lots of different meetings and lots of different places and go to, you know, travel to meetings. I think that's been a good way to get to know people and different people. And it's also powerful for my own personal recovery, and it kind of goes to the tradition that talks about principles before personalities, because if I'm at the same seven meetings, seven nights a week, I start getting into the personality side of it, you know, and become judgmental and what have you. But if I travel to another meeting and hear somebody maybe sharing the exact same thing, I'll be sitting there, wow, what a story, you know. But that's just something for me. Anyways, the topic of this is the first step, and there's no better place for me to be today than on the first step, talking about the first step, sharing my experience, strength, and hope on the first step. More importantly, living the first step in my life. I really want to thank the committee, including myself, because I've been doing some of this stuff, and the first step is so important when you're doing, and it's a lot of work, you know. I really want to thank the committee and everyone involved with putting this thing together and helping out and volunteering. But with that, if anybody's been to area service or anything like that, you know, the first step is a very powerful step to hang on to. And I need not lose focus of why I'm here and get too far into that personality side, because Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. There's no question the last 14 years that I would have lived. There's no question about that, where I was at when I got here. And not only has Narcotics Anonymous allowed me to live, to be clean, but to really feel good about not using. That's a miracle. It's a one miracle to not use. Miracle. Mm-hmm. Granted. Not use, miracle. But to have that be the vehicle to feel good about my life and to share that with others, share other people's recoveries with them and see them get clean and to have a sponsor and to sponsor people, to ask for help and to help others and feel that spiritual awakening. What a gift. What a gift this program has been in my life. It is without a doubt the most important thing that has ever happened to me in my life was finding this program, finding you people, finding the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and what a blessing, you know. And when we talk about the steps, you know, we're talking about some work. And when we talk about the traditions, we're talking about living with each other. And I'm worth it today to do some work. It's a sign of that I'm starting to love myself when I'm willing to do some work called the steps. And I'm beginning to love you when I'm willing to do some work called the traditions and work through those personalities, principles, and stay focused on the primary purpose, which is to stay clean and help others. In talking about the first step, there's a few things that I really get out of it. One thing I want to share is my sponsor, Bill, who passed away this past November. He was my sponsor for 14 years, and I took that, he took that relationship very seriously. I mean, I talked to him every day, you know. Sometimes, you know, once a week or twice a week. But I tell you what, when the you know what hit the fan, I tell you, and then sometimes I call him up and say, Bill, I'm going, but aren't you tired of me calling? He's like, no, it's better than reading a cheap novel. Keep calling me. I want to hear about this. But, you know, he loved me unconditionally, and he's passed. And he died clean in this program. He spoke here a few times about being ill in recovery. He spoke last year about that. And right to the very end, he was saying the same things I was saying, that this was the most powerful thing that ever happened in his life, was the 12 steps, 12 traditions, the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Mm. And he took that to his deathbed, saying that. And one thing he used to say about the first step to me was, and the more I worked the first step, the more I realized, he said that really the whole program is in the first step. The whole program. Mm. You just need to work the other 11 steps to realize it, which makes sense. Wow. So in other words, you don't get out of the other 11 steps. And when I read that first step, when I work the first step, there's such comfort there for me. You know, when I just think of the words, you know, when I'm in a situation that's hard for me to deal with or whatever, and I just think about the words. We admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. It's so comforting to me to even just say the words of the first step. And, you know, when you talk about that first statement, we admitted we're powerless over our addiction. One thing that really tells me is that I'm an addict. It's not like once I get clean, I don't have the disease, you know, because a part of me is waiting to recover, you know what I mean? Like, to arrive, like, okay, you know, it hadn't happened at 14 years, maybe 15 is the magic number. Unfortunately, my friend Huey, who has 31 years, says it don't happen at 31, so keep coming back. And I got to realize that I am just as close to the liquor store or dope man or whatever as anybody in this room. And you know what? I got running shoes on. I can get there quick. What I'm saying is, that I'm a candidate to go back out and die and all of that stuff, and that I really can't take comfort in the fact of how much time I have. I feel good about it. I mean, sometimes I wake up and just can't believe it, because I'll tell you what, sometimes when I sit there and think about, like, twisting one up, it's still so familiar to me, you know, the album cover with the C, you know, and...
That's a good old thing.
It's like I did it yesterday, you know what I'm saying? It is still right there. That monster is right there, always. I need to always stay on this step. And the second part of the step where it talks about unmanageability to me is the fact that I need help. I need help. I need to pray. I need to call my sponsor. I'll tell you what, Bill knew it. But I felt guilty doing this. I was looking for my sponsor before he passed. You know what I'm saying? I recognize I need help, and now I have a new sponsor, and I really feel like I'm still in the bed, I guess, is what I really love this guy and really respect him, and we've been getting along great, and we communicate well. But I tell you what, I feel like a little kid calling him a lot. Like, and it's a simple situation, you know. It ain't rocket science. It's something at work or something with my wife or something with a committee, somebody said in a area service or whatever. But you know what? My feelings, you know, that monster's there, you know. Sometimes I still believe that a couple Percocets on an empty stomach with a hot cup of coffee will solve everything. Mm. And I got to get real with that. You know, it still looks good to me sometimes. And another thing Bill did for me that really helped me with that, about getting honest, which is one of the spiritual principles in this step, was a very, very powerful principle in my life, and one that I slip on regularly, you know. I remember telling Bill one time, I was talking about my ex-wife, and I said, "Bill, but she lies." Didn't she? She lies. And Bill was like, "You must, everybody lies. Everybody. Why don't you get real with that?" And I had to get real with that. And I'm like, "Well, I don't." And he's like, "That's bingo, there's the proof. You just lied." So honesty is such a powerful part of this first step. Admitting that I'm powerless. Admitting that I'm sick. Still sick. Admitting that my life is unmanageable. Admitting that I need a meeting. Admitting that I need you. Admitting that I need the steps. All the steps. Admitting that I need a sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, you're still on step one as far as I'm concerned. Or there's a part of step one you haven't got. I've said that before and people have gotten mad. "What do you mean? I've been 2 years. I don't have a sponsor. What are you talking about?" But at least my strength and hope is if you don't accept that a sponsor in your life, then maybe your life isn't quite that unmanageable that you need one. The more hopeless case, gonna die addict that you are. Is that for me? I don't know. They've been ringing me every day. What is this going up? You can't do that there. You know, anyway. But anyways, the more hopeless case, I'm gonna die addict in desperation, the more available this program is for me. And that involves a sponsor. You know, either you need one or you don't. I don't know. I need one. And John, you know, I've been calling John a lot lately. And like I said, it's been one of the most powerful things in my recovery is sponsorship. You know, I need God today. I need to pray. I heard Tina talking about it earlier, like done scientific experiments of days when I sincerely ask God for help. I mean sincerely. I am serious. I need help. Maybe not to solve a situation. Just help me get through it. Help me accept it. Help me survive it. Whatever. And comparing that to days when I don't. And I'm here to report, I mean, the days that I do just seem to turn out better. Does that mean there's a God? I don't know. But that works for me, and I'm going to work it. You know, I mean, I pray that I keep practicing that as much as I can. I don't always, but days I do pray are better. And anyways, getting back to the first step, one of the exercise, the honesty exercise Bill had me do, and I think this is a real important piece when it comes to having fun and getting honest with myself and getting honest with whether or not those three Percocets on an empty stomach and a hot cup of coffee and, you know, and a Swiss one up or whatever is really the solution or if I really want to do it. Bill said, "All right, let's make a list. Let's list everything in life that you want. I mean that you truly want. What kinds of things would be on that list?" And on the list, of course, you know, money, a loving, nurturing relationship with someone, to have a home, to have a car, to have a boat in my case, a good job, health, all those things is what I really want. And then he said, "All right, let's get honest. How has drugs and alcohol supported that list?" It's like...
Trick question.
Good question. How has drugs and alcohol supported that list? Getting honest, it doesn't. Getting honest, I still have that thought. I want to use. Where does that thought come from? Then he said to me, "Well, let's think. We're talking about a disease of thoughts and feelings. When you take one shot of liquor, it kills 10,000 brain cells. Who knows what all the BAM and all that shit, I used to do, you know. I used to buy shit. It had a K scratched in it, but I knew it wasn't real. I used to shoot that shit anyways. You know what I'm saying? It might be real. Maybe some scratched up birth control pill work. You know, maybe it'll do something. Hell, it's better than nothing. You know what I mean? That's how, and anybody ever pick up some foreign object out of the carpet and said, "What the fuck is this?" It might be. I was the type where even when the smoke came out and it didn't look, you know, that white, it would be some thick, dark smoke that you knew what, I'd finish the hit anyway. Who knows? So, what he asked me was, if it's a disease of thoughts and feelings, which organ in your body do you think's been affected? The same organ that does your thinking and feelings. This is a very powerful step, y'all. Let's get honest. Perhaps my brain has been affected. You know what I'm saying? Maybe when I have, and maybe it's been a rumor up to now, before getting honest with myself, maybe when I have that thought that I want to use, that I like getting high, maybe I really do have a disease called addiction. And, you know, that makes sense to me, that I really do want the things that the first list I made, you know. And in recovery, I'm starting to, you know, some of those things are happening. Things, my life is more manageable. I have accumulated some possessions and do have peace of mind and am happy in a lot of different ways. But you know what? Shit still happens. Life on life's terms. And sometimes I think that, well, yeah, but that's not really what I want. But the truth is, that's the disease lying to me. And another list he had me made was about having fun. He's like, you know, because I tell you, when I get honest, I'll think that, oh, yeah, there were times in my using that it was definitely fun. My sponsor would ask me, yeah, is that just before you threw up or just after? You know, like throwing up is fun. And he helped me get honest with that, too, you know, having me make a list of things that I thought were fun. And on the list, even the bare, essential, God-given instincts that are fun, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, food and the four F's, you know, food, football, fishing, and
yeah.
Frolicking, we'll call it. Or any four that you want. You know, actually, there's this guy, what's his name, who does tapes, recovery tapes that are pretty cool, videotapes for treatment centers, Brother Earl, I want to say, but it might not be. But anyways, he talks about food, sex, exercise and sleep, God-given gifts to help our body be healthy and to procreate, and even drugs and alcohol took that shit away. Because in the end, I didn't care about any of that stuff anymore. Food, sex, shoot, I need a hit, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'll try to fit you in still, but I need a hit. Now, we'll squeeze you in later, you know what I mean? And so what he said was, you know, was it really fun or was I just feeling this kind of fuel, this gasoline, and was my addiction getting off on that? Was it really just like, I don't know how to, and another powerful thing, was it really just taking away the withdrawal symptoms I was feeling? Because I'll tell you what, that messed me up when I was smoking cigarettes, and I read about the main reason we keep smoking cigarettes is to stave off withdrawal symptoms. Mm. And I was sitting there going, you can't tell me that. I'm enjoying this right now. Yeah, it kind of feels good. And say, yeah, you were in withdrawal 2 minutes ago and now you're not. So does it feel good or are you just staving off withdrawal symptoms? And I thought, you know what, that might even go back to some of the drugs I used too. Man, maybe that's why I thought it felt good. I was staving off. I sure felt like hell when I was driving, when I had the cop. You know what I'm saying? Tina was talking about busting your bowels even on the way. I can relate to that. You know, once I got that stuff, you know, it was all addiction. And the powerful story Bill, my sponsor, told me about that was, isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease is? That it has taken all the credit for fun in your brain when you look back. And you know what? All of us, as old as we are all young enough, old enough, or whatever, to be brought up in the generation where the TV screen has told us our whole life, this time was brought to you by, you know, it's almost like we've been programmed to believe that, hey, this is young, happy people having fun. You know, they don't show the throwing up part on it. You know, Budweiser did this to me. You know, they don't show that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like we got a lot we're working against on this fun issue. You know, I know tomorrow night is going to be fun, and we're going to be clean in recovery. Tonight's going to be fun. You know what I'm saying? There's dances. There's all kinds of shows and stuff here, and that is fun. That is real. That's getting honest. And the story that I like to tell to that Bill was talking about was, the story goes like this. I remember one time having fun getting high. I was on the beach in Mexico with friends, and we were around a campfire, and we were singing and strumming and, you know, all everything else, a little tequila and twist one up and all that kind of stuff. You can't tell me that I didn't have fun. It was the time of my youth. And his point was, isn't it interesting that you're given what your brain remembers, addict brain remembers as fun, is the drugs and alcohol. I still hook it up like that. It was the drug. Yeah, I remember. I was blasted, yeah. He said, you're not looking at the fact that you were with friends. Mm-hmm. You were in Cancun, my God. You were in a beautiful spot. You were on vacation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had fun. You were young. You know, in other words, even a miserable person has fun sometimes. Yeah, I was having fun. No doubt about it. But what was responsible for that fun? Mm. That's all about getting honest. You know, and there's a couple other principles in this step that are real powerful for me. And the one is humility. You know, that there's a lot of comfort in that. Just like when I read the step or think about the first step or surrender, you know, my ego doesn't want to. I want to still argue the point, you know, one more thing, you know. And it's really a comforting thought when I arrive at the point of surrender and realize I do not have to fight anymore. I don't have to fix anybody in any committee meeting. I don't have to go rearrange those t-shirts out there. You know what I'm saying? That it's okay. It's not my job. My job is to just row the boat and trust God to steer. You know, row the boat with the steps. Row the boat with the traditions, work this program, do the next right thing, and trust God to steer. Now, I can jump in the back of the boat and start steering, but guess what? God don't row. It ain't his job. His job's to steer. Uh-huh. And if I'm back there steering the boat, guess where the boat's going if nobody's rowing? Mm-hmm. We're up against the rocks. You know, so it's really about working this program. It's really about trusting God, following those that have been, you know, listening to those that have been there before me and trusting the process and not picking and choosing the parts. Well, I'll get a sponsor, but I'm not working steps or whatever, you know. Try the whole package. You know, it's incredible what 100% effort can get you, where 98% effort, you're still bucking, you know. All of a sudden, you just start flowing down the river. And that's my experience, you know, when I do that. And I'm here to report that I struggle with it every day, though. That's why I need to remember to get to a meeting. And, you know, there's nothing more powerful for me than sharing and reporting myself in an open meeting. I had to do that the other night, and it was pretty humiliating. You know, we can have 14 years in this program and shoplift. You know what I'm saying? And I did some of that the other day, and I'm not proud of it. And I made excuses, you know, the line was long, and, you know, and you know, I just, shoot, they charge too much anyways or whatever, you know, and it didn't feel good. Yet I talked about it in an open meeting, and what I really need to go is go back to that store. You know what I'm saying? So, anyways, that's about it for me. Are you ready? When I finish. Well, last thing I want to say is that that I love you all, and please have a great convention. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ben. Our next speaker will be Claire.
My name is Claire, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Claire.
And boy, I was just sitting there, and it felt like my heart was going to jump out of my shirt. Mm. And whenever I get nervous, I know that it's God trying to get on the inside and remove Claire on the outside. First, I want to thank that CPRCNA for allowing me to come here and share my experience, my strength, and my hope from the first step. And I remember when I first came to the convention, my first convention, I had like 4 months clean. And thank God for the members who had more time than me, who brought me down here with them. And I had like 14 months clean, and I remember being, see, they remodeled this building, but it was, where were we at? Downstairs. And I remember when the countdown came, they got to 18 years, and I stood up, and I was like, and I had like 4 months clean, and I'm like standing up for 18 years, and my sponsor looked at me at the time, and she said, sit down, child. I used for that long, you know, so I thought, you know, because when we first come in, we be in such of a disillusion, you know, in this illusion, and now we're not really here. So I'm standing up for like 18 years, because I thought that's what they said, you know, and I happily took a seat, you know, and I was like, I guess she said, keep coming back. But I need to say I went back out, you know, and I managed to make it back. You know, that's the beauty. You know, I managed to make it back the following year. So this will be like my 7th convention at Ocean City. You know, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I use by any means necessary. You know, I grew up in a big family. You know, I grew up the youngest of 11. You know, my parents were very dysfunctional. You know, all they did was fuss, fucking fight. And that's all I knew. You know, and growing up in that household, that's all I knew. You know, it wasn't until I was introduced to the drugs. And I thought that by me using drugs, what it was going to do is it was going to help me escape most of my feelings. I'm talking about looking for love in all the wrong places, really wanting some love in my household, but didn't know how to go about asking for some love because there wasn't no love there in the beginning. You know, and I'm talking about going on the outside, looking for love in all the wrong places, hanging out with the wrong people. And I'm talking about using at a very early age. I started out at 12. You know what I mean? So that's why I say it was like 18 years. You know, I came through the rules of Narcotics Anonymous at the age of 29. I thank God. You know, and I'm talking about hanging out with those people who did any and everything. I felt more comfortable in that environment because that's the way I grew up. You know, and hanging out with them was like it was relaxing to me. You know, so what I did was I started doing any and everything that they was doing to get one more. You know, I'm talking about tricking even when I didn't want to trick. I'm talking about leaving my kids home with my parents and telling them that I'll be right back. See, the first step talks about your story. And if you don't remember your story, you're bound to repeat your story. See, a lot of times I don't want to talk about my story, but I ain't trying to relive my story. So I know I have to come in here and I have to get honest. And I have to, like, tell y'all, like this is the way I went when I was out there using. I'm talking about laying down with somebody who weighed about 300 pounds I'm smoked crack. I was extra small. I'm talking about doing some things that I really didn't want to do. But I had to do it anyway to feed my disease, because if I didn't feed it, I was off the hook. Everything must go. You know, I thank God for being a part of this program, man. I really do. You know, because the best way that I can describe the first step for me is unmanageable and insane. Unmanageable and insane. You know, a lot of times we talk about we can't walk on water, but one thing I've learned is that God will allow us to at least have enough faith to get out the boat. To get out the boat. You know, I'm still nervous. Because, see, I really don't like talking in front of a lot of people. But trust me, I use in front of a lot of y'all. I did not care. I really didn't. You know, my home group is about big as this meeting. You know, when I came to the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I need to tell y'all, I came in here with two bullets in me. My fall down in a black burrow. I'm talking about at the bottom of the burrow. I'm talking about I was out there sleeping. I'm talking about I was out there sleeping with any and everybody. You know, I had caught syphilis so bad. See, I remember my story. I remember where my disease took me. You know, I had caught it so bad, and I'm talking about being up in a crack house. I'm talking about sitting up in this crack house, and I'm still smoking crack. And y'all ain't care, because y'all wanted to trip with me anyway. I'm talking about being up in there smelling like a fish market. I ain't even had no money to buy no fish. You know, God is truly good, because what happened was somebody in my family was able to come in there and pull me up out of there. But see, when you're so locked and loaded into disease, you go back all the time. That was my main thing. I always went back. If it was a bad relationship, I went back. You know, because the fear going forward was overpowering the fear of just going, you know, going, the fear going forward was more greater than the fear of staying. You know what I mean? Did I say that right? I don't know. I always went back. And I'll never forget being shot twice in the stomach. And I remember when I told myself this was what I first started using. Because you know, when we get that first one, we still chasing until we get that feeling again. You know, and when I got that first feeling, I remember telling myself, I never want to stop this feeling. You know, I want to get this feeling and continue to get it and get it in. You know, I even told myself, when I die, I want to die high. How many of us told ourselves that? Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, because I'm never alone. I'm never alone. You know, and I remember telling myself that. But see, you got to be careful what you tell yourself, because that day just might come. You know what I mean? And I remember being shot twice in the stomach, and that day came. I went up in a crack house. You know how we like go in somebody else's house and we take advantage of their house? We give them a couple crumbs and we run in things. You know what I mean? That's how we do. And that's what I did. You know, I was shot twice and then go up into the apartment building, and I'm sitting up there in this apartment with a thing of Odasso and a rock. And every time I think about this, I get very emotional, because it's not, I'm just grateful. I am so grateful to like be here. Because I remember being in an apartment and drinking the Odasso and smoking more crack. And the moment that I exhaled, all the blood came out my mouth. But God is so good, because what he did was, he said, I already paid your price.
right then the paramedics kicked the door open and they were tearing my clothes off, the good old dopey that I am. I was like, don't be tearing my clothes off of me. Well, y'all see.
No.
I got my clothes, you know, tearing my shit on, cutting things up off of me. And by the way, how long are we going to be at the hospital? Because I got to make it back here to Montana Avenue. Oh, boy, thank God for the second step, too. And I remember being in this hospital for like 2 months. And I want to sit here and I want to tell y'all when I got out of the hospital that I, like, you know, got my life together and came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But if I stand here and tell y'all that shit, I'll be lying. Because I need to say that I got out the hospital and the same day I went right back. I'm talking about the hospital being the best room. I really ain't wanted to leave, but they told me it was my time to go. You know what I mean? And with it, where else did I have to go but back? I ain't know no better. Girlfriend caught up. They cut all my clothes off me. So what they did was they took me in one of those rooms and gave me somebody else's clothes. They could have been somebody dead, but I picked out the hoochiest outfit in there. Girlfriend ain't had no money, so she knows she had to get some money to get her next one when she got over there. And that's what happened. The vicious cycle started all over again. You know, I went back around the way, and I remember going around there and having like 50 staples in my stomach and not taking care of his wound. Not like going back for my follow-ups and my family at that time, because I had a burned daughter present. You know, it was at a point where my family was like, when I would go to their house, they would like look out the peephole and say, what do you want? They wouldn't even crack the door, put their feet in it. One time they was doing that. Until they got to the point where they like stand behind the door and look out the peephole and ask me what I want. You know, and I end up going back around the same way. And what happened, I found myself in that same old vicious cycle all over again. You know, the first one is always free. You know, and the next one you have to do the work for. You know, and I remember being in an apartment and sweating because, you know, back in July, you're in a crack house, ain't no air conditioning. You know, it's like 1,000 people up in there, everybody fighting. Arguing, snatching, stealing somebody else's shit. And you sitting up in there and you trying to get your next one on too. You know, and that's how it was for me. And I remember being in that setting and what happened was the sweat from my body was starting to get into the wound. I'm talking about being up in there smelling so bad that nobody wanted to get high with me. Come on then. Didn't nobody want to get, I mean, see, a lot of times we come in here, we forget where we came from. But I can't forget where I came from because I'm not trying to repeat it. You know, didn't nobody, they would give me my stuff and say, you go on that side. I was just grateful to get a piece. Look, I don't care what y'all are, just give me mine. You know, and I found myself back in the hospital and I'll never forget the doctor telling me because, see, God speaks to doctors too. Yeah, and I remember him telling me, like, you know, you have to go get yourself some help. And see, the you know, we burned down a lot of bridges, but what happened was I didn't burn down a bridge that I had with my sister, my older sister, who passed away when I had 3 years in the program. She helped me get into a treatment center. And at that time, I was more willing. I went to the treatment center and I did everything that they told me to do. Because one thing I've learned, if you're not willing, you're not going to get the same. You know, you have to have that body. You know, I just got totally tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of being fucking sick and tired. Just got tired. You know, and what happened was I went to the treatment facility. I took all the suggestions and I followed all the directions. And they told me, they said, look, you need to get honest. I was telling on everybody. I was telling everybody business. What else y'all want me to tell? Because I remember my story. You know, then I got a sponsor, I started getting numbers. You know, I started doing everything that they was telling me to do. You know, and by me getting a sponsor, you know, that just like opened the doors. Basically, that's what it did. It opened the doors for me to get the recovery that I needed, to get the help that I needed, because I was a sick individual. And some days I still am. I don't want to make it seem as though I got to this point where I'm well. Because I'm not. No. And by working with my sponsor, she introduced me to the step process. And I need to tell y'all that one thing she installed in me about the first step is that she said the first step is just like being allergic to tomatoes. That means that you can't have no tomato juice. You can't have no tomatoes, no ketchup. You can't have none of that stuff. Because it's just like your disease. You know, if you get one, you'll break out in spot, Claire. Not only your house, but the hit house. You know what I mean? The liquor store. You know, all those things. So today I'm very in touch with this disease. You know, I also learned in the first step that the disease is just a symptom of my problem. You know, the problem started long ago before the disease came about, before the using came about, put it like that. You know, I also learned in the first step, the second part of the first step is the unmanageability part, about being emotionally unmanageable with my emotions, and today I'm still like that because I know that this disease will check in with me every day to see if I'm ready to check out every day, especially when I'm dealing with feelings. This disease is sitting in my thinking. And if I'm dealing with my feelings, and if my man,
yeah, right.
He's squinching, y'all, so I ain't gonna say but if I'm in an uncomfortable spot with him, you know, what I'm doing, I'm learning how to, like, tell him how I feel. Because at one time I would cut you and didn't tell you what you did to me. You know, I have a lot of, trust me, you know, today I'm just grateful to be alive, happy, joyous, and free. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, if you're new in here, keep coming. Just keep coming. You know, this is a buffet of life at this convention. Get everything that you came here to get. If you're new in here, leave the men alone. You know what I mean? Focus on the recovery. Focus on the meeting. Focus on the entertainment that's going to be here. You know what I mean? Get what you came for, not what your girlfriend came for, or your husband, or your wife, but get something that's going to feed your spirit. Because that's one thing my sponsor tells me is, Clark, you need to feed your spirit every chance you get. Every chance you get, you need to feed your spirit. You know, because I suffer from this disease that's trying to kill my spirit. You know, I also suffer from another disease called depression. And I get depressed, I shut down. And one thing about this disease of addiction, man, it likes when you isolate. That's when it works on you the most. It will eat your ass up when you're depressed. Tell you all kinds of stuff. You know, I don't want to share the stuff it done told me, but if I share some of that, y'all be like, damn. Okay. You know, I'm just grateful. Because at first I was like, I really don't want to do this. You know, the first step is the step that we all have to practice on a daily basis. You know, every time I go to a meeting and I raise my hand and I say my name is Claire and I'm an addict, I admit that I'm powerless over this disease. Because normal people don't just do that. Normal people just don't come into a meeting You know the ones, because see, I work with some people, they can get high and they can drink and they can come to work the next day, but see, if I do that shit, I won't show back up. So I'm very in touch with my disease. One is never enough for me. Never. You know, so when they be saying they go on to the after thing and after party and all that, I be like, see y'all next week. You know, because I don't play with this disease. I keep it up front with me. I told y'all where I've been. You know, I'm just grateful to be here. Am I out of town or do you want me to share some more?
You've got
time. 5 more minutes. Okay, let me think. The first step also helped me to get out the denial piece. You know, that part of the denial is the part that keeps us from the truth. You know, that part like, he got somebody at home, but you'd rather lay with him anyway. Or he's still married and you're still with him. Also learned that if you haven't did the first step, it's only because you ain't ready to get on. Mm-hmm. I thank God for the program and our cause for mom. You know, it's always a beginning, and you have to begin with the first step, but you can't do it alone. You have to have a sponsor who has the knowledge of the step work. They say how we fall and we can't get up. Mm-hmm. And we might fall and break our neck and never get back up if we do it on our own.
Right. Say it again.
You know, I thank God for allowing me to be here. I'm not as nervous as I was before. Because I allow him to come in and push Claire out the way. Mm. You know, because usually I'm all cursing and everything. Yeah, I'm like, but, it's great to be here. All I can say is just have fun. You know, do what you came here for. Leave all the rest behind. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire. We have 15 minutes. I think we have 15 minutes. No? Yeah. Okay. We only have 5 minutes. Okay. We want to thank everybody to share, Claire and Ben for sharing. And could someone please come up and read Just for Today?